You're tuned to EAA Radio, the voice of EAA. 93.3 FM, 1210 AM, and online at eaaradio.net.
We talked about this a little bit. I hope I'm not breaking any news, but one of the possibilities that was mentioned to increase pilot training is and chapter involvement, maybe even membership, is the flying clubs. And certainly that's been talked about a little bit. Where does EAA... hasn't really endorsed that in the past because of certain reasons. Where are we at that right now?
Well, there's, you know, this is going to be a long answer, not a short answer.
That's fine.
Surprise, surprise, right? The bottom line about flying clubs, you know, we've got a restrictions on our chapters to for owning aircraft, and it's driven about exclusively by liability issue. However, having lived abroad, you know, I lived abroad and I lived in London for 4 years, brought the steerman over with me and flew all over England for 4 years, and I learned a few things. And one of the things that I learned is aviation is not better over there. It is expensive. To give you a comparison, now this is 2001, you know, $8.56 a gallon avgas, $675 a month for a hangar, $5,400 a year for an insurance premium on a steerman. Those are numbers that most people just can't endure for very long. So the point I make about that is they have shown us a model that can work. And that flying club model is very solid across Europe. Lots of flying clubs with lots of good airplanes to fly. And they've done a wonderful job of keeping aviation affordable in that model. So we have begun the process of a pilot. We have a three-stage approach to flying clubs at EAA, and it's called a phased gate approach, which means if you make it through the first gate, you go to the second. If you make it through the second, you go to the third. First gate is already underway. We're creating our very own flying club here in Oshkosh. The EA Flying Club with the airplanes that EA owns here in Oshkosh, to model it, understand how to manage it, understand how to schedule it, how to maintain it, how to make it commercially viable. If we like what we see and we enjoy that particular model, the next step says, how do we replicate that model out in the field? Now, out in the field are 900 wonderful chapters, which look to me like a pretty good place to launch, a pretty good starting point for some infrastructure that might look like a key opportunity to keep people in aviation and keep them flying. So we've got a journey to travel. Don't expect anything to happen for another year or more, but we're going to go through the first phase and see what we can do about that.
Sounds very exciting. I'm sure that the chapters have been wondering for many, many years, is what's one way for them to focus the activity right there at the chapter level, especially around an airplane. Great thing to focus your energy around, right?
It is. And, you know, when you see the chapters, a lot of chapters have kind of informal flying clubs going on already. You know, I'll swap my airplane, you can use mine, I'll borrow yours, you've got a four-seater, I need this. Those kind of things are happening today. Now, when you start doing this for hire, so to speak, when you start trading dollars for this, that's when things change. The liability structure changes, the need to manage capital changes when you acquire the aircraft and put it to work, how you put the capital to work, and then how do you manage the actual operations of the flying club itself. It is not necessarily a casual make-it-up-as-you-go approach. You do that, you're going to encounter some problems. And we've talked to some flight schools. We're looking for best-in-class models around the country now. Flight schools. I didn't mean flight schools. I meant flying clubs. Mm-hmm. We've talked to a lot of flying clubs, and we've heard their horror stories, and we've heard their success stories, and I think we've learned a lot.
The past 30 days have been pretty active for EAA's Government and Advocacy Department. The situation with Light Squared, the Blocked Aircraft Registration Request Program, or the BAR lawsuit, that EAA has signed on to, the AVGAS lawsuit in California, which EAA has commented about, and now we have an FAA funding crisis. How is EAA positioned on all these issues, and what does the organization consider when taking that position?
How long is this radio show?
We have the time. We made the time for you, Rod.
Oh, he is so smooth, isn't he? Wow. Well, I'll tell you. Let's talk about the A items first. Let's focus on that and not
sure.
get too bundled up in some of the other stuff. First of all, our positioning. We have a wonderful relationship with the legislative process and the regulatory process, otherwise known as Congress and the FAA. Mm-hmm. So our relationships with the FAA are truly built on mutual respect, mutual trust, and a long tradition of getting along together for the benefit of aviation, actually started way back under Paul Pobrezny's leadership. So that relationship is unique and special, and I have to say EAA has really been enjoying a unique position with the FAA leadership that maybe we can make work for aviators. Let's put it modestly that way. In the situation with the FAA funding, you know, we're disappointed that they're not here. They're disappointed that they're not here. Let's not forget that. There's a lot of great people at the FAA who are passionate aviators who want to do the right thing. Many of them were scheduled to be here with us. On the safety side of the issue, none of the safety operations nationally are affected by that funding crisis at the FAA. 4,000 people were furloughed last week from the FAA who are in what's called the AIP work, equipment areas, technology, R&D areas. So those are the staff that were furloughed. Now, for those of you who don't know, 4,000 employees is just a little bit under 4% of the total number of employees in the FAA. So it'll give you the scale and scope of how that went. The BAR program, I want to talk about that as an A item, because I can tell you now that one of the things that we see happening when the Department of Transportation, in this particular case, wants to remove more of our freedom, that's a problem. So I have a strong position personally that says I think my membership is sensitive to losing their rights and their privileges for secure information and privacy. Okay? Just a little bit. One of the audience members is going, yeah, just a little bit. So the point I make about that is this. We surveyed our membership. 92% of our membership said, you know what? I want my privacy protected. And by the way, there's a lot of aviators, and when I sample the question on a grassroots tour, there's a whole lot of folks in the room that do not know what BAR is. So how many of you in this audience know what BAR is really all about? See that? So we've got some education to do on BAR. BAR is the ability that you have to block your IN number if you're going to fly or transport yourself in this system, the IFR system. Okay, fundamentally, that's what it is. So if you don't want anybody to know your beeswax, you can block your IN number through the BAR program. Congress granted that right nearly 10 years ago. That is being removed, unqualified removed, by the Department of Transportation under the guise of security. Now, your IN number is still completely available and usable to every federal authority who would need it as you transport yourself and your airplane to wherever you may be going from and to. That hasn't changed at all. The BAR program allowed that information not to be revealed in the public domain so that anybody can get on FlightAware and name your other flight tracking software program and see your whereabouts. Obviously, there are several implications. One is loss of privacy. Our point being, as reflected in the survey by 66% of our membership said, I am an American citizen with rights. Just because I'm an aviator doesn't mean I have less rights.
That's correct.
Absolutely. So that's what the survey said for membership. So you guys are all well in line. All the heads in the audience are nodding. It looks about like 66 or 67% to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other point to make is there's business implications. Now, many of us as EA members are businessmen and use airplanes for business as well. So the common fight that we have with the need for privacy in the business world is if they can track where the company airplane's going and there's a big business deal about to be made, there's a mergers and acquisition opportunity underway, that can be a very expensive proposition for someone on one side of that discussion if they know where the top guys are traveling to and from. So there's real live economic impact that's unfavorable, has potential to be damaging if we lose that privacy right. So we can go on about that in a long time, but needless to say, our membership has spoken. They've said, we want to preserve our privacy rights. We do not want that right to be systemically erased over the need for security.
If people around the grounds are listening right now, you'll have a chance to ask Rod some questions coming up in just a few moments, but we have time for maybe one or two more questions. AirVenture was a challenge from a water standpoint last year, and it affected just about everyone. How are we doing so far this year?
Well, look at the sky. I mean, look at this. We have had a wonderful weather period leading up to AirVenture this year. It has been great. The ground is firm. The sky's been mostly clear. But the thing that the weather has done and has enabled, people that travel quite a distance sometimes get here. Sometimes they travel in slow airplanes like I do, right? Well, it takes you a while to get here if you're from very far away. More people and more airplanes are here because they have the ability to get here unfettered with the weather. And we see that. Look at the North 40. Look how full the North 40 is already. Look at the campground. Look how full the campground is. So that weather leading up has really given us a good lift. All the early indicators about how AirVenture is going to go are north. Advanced ticket sales are north. I mean, campground sales are way north. Website activity is way north. So I'd have to say the weather's been kind to us this year.
And we have room for you. We still have room, so come on. If you're thinking about it.
Come on out. Fly the Fisk approach. The FAA people are all there, and they're better than ever. They just get better year after year after year. It's a lot of fun. If you've never flown in this place, it's something that every aviator owes to themselves.
If there are a few things on the grounds that you absolutely want to see this week, what are they? What are the ROD-approved things?
Oh, my gosh. There is so much. It's all right. There is not a bad day at AirVenture this year. Every day is a great day. But I tell you what, you know, we're going to honor a great American on Tuesday night, Bob Hoover.
Oh.
You guys ever seen his air show act? Oh, my gosh. He's going to be honored on Tuesday night. It's a blast. Thursday night, it's going to be Burt Rutan, the most prolific aircraft designer of our time. What a great night. So those are two big events. REO Speedwagon tonight. Can't wait to get that going. Lieutenant Dan Band Friday night. Aaron Tippin concert Saturday night. And if you haven't seen it before, you got to see the night air show and the fireworks. And I'll tell you this. Fireworks were good last year. They're more than twice as good this year. You know how I know that? I wrote the check for it.
Yeah, Saturday is the day to be here at AirVenture. If you're not planning to be here any other day, we have lots for you every day. Rod, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Your first EA Radio Live. How'd you do?
It was fun.
Yeah, I thought so. What did you think? Yeah?
Ask them how I did. I don't know how I did.
All right, Rod will stick around for those of you in the audience. If you have any questions, otherwise, we'll be back here tomorrow for the Aviation Journalist Roundtable. You're listening to EAA Radio Live.